This boat briefing podcast is sponsored by KVH Industries, which creates and delivers the innovations that enable our mobile world. A global leader in mobile connectivity, KVH's groundbreaking, award-winning solutions enable people on leisure boats, yachts, and commercial vessels to stay connected to business, family, and friends using innovative hybrid communications and content. Founded in 1982, the company is based in Middleton, Rhode Island, with research, development, and manufacturing operations in Middleton and sales, service, and engineering offices around the globe. Their website, kvh.com. You can follow them on Facebook at KVH Yachting and Boating, on Instagram at KVH Yachting, and you can also visit KVH Yachting and Boating on LinkedIn. Now, on with the podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Caroline White, and to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is Cecile Gowett. Cecile, you have just been to our spectacular owners' event Between the Bays in Anguilla and St. Martin. I'm horribly jealous, but please do tell us what you did there.
Oh, sure. Yes, the good life of a yachting editor. You know, it has its perks for sure. If anybody out there is listening, looking for a career, yes, if you do like these kind of very beautiful events, yes, you might want to have a look into it. I'm sure we already discussed this on air, but this is one of the first of these events we've ever done. And it was quite nice because 9 super yachts took part. And this program started in Anguilla, as you said, and it was hosted at the Belmont Cap Juluca, which is really an amazing hotel. I've seen a lot of really beautiful hotels and beautiful beaches, but wow. This may be the most amazing beach I have yet seen.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Big claims. So do tell us what you got up to there.
Oh, well, a lot of eating great food in really good company, a bit of sampling cocktails and drinks, and also a lot of hard work like treasure hunts. we had one on property organized by Quest and Lucy Anguilla. The clues were all about the island, and we had Google and the local team on hand to help us out resolve the very tough questions like... take a picture of your team with a shack tree. Do you know what a shack tree is?
No, I don't. I don't know what a shack tree is.
Me either. Well, I didn't up to now. Now I know it's what some other places we call a flamboyant tree. Oh. So there we go.
Oh, great.
And yeah, so in case we were stumped, we could get some help there. So that was amazing. And we had a lot of fun.
That sounds fantastic. I am quite jealous. So actually... treasure hunts seem to be all the rage on charters at the moment, which is probably why it was so relevant to our event. We actually ran a big feature on treasure hunts in the March edition of Boat International, and our travel editor, another person with a very enviable job, Georgia Boscawen, went to Sardinia to try one out. And that was by a company called Luxury Treasure Hunt, which is run by a guy who used to work in Hollywood productions, so felt very, very high budget, a long way from a crew member with a parrot tied to his shoulder doing a bad Cornish accent and sort of hiding a bottle on a beach somewhere. So yeah, there are some really spectacular treasure hunt companies out there. Also, I know Based on a True Story does some really amazing ones.
Oh, so, yeah. I have seen some of these programs described. It's quite amazing.
Yeah, like just everything you could possibly imagine, any adventure that you can imagine, they bring to life. Really incredible stuff. So tell us, what else did you do at this event?
So then, of course, the reason it's called Between the Bays is because we went to two places, as you mentioned. So we went from Anguilla to St. Martin, and the really cool part of that is that all the boats lined up, and we did a cruising company, as we say. We just all headed together, which was a fantastic sight. I know to some people it may sound like 9 yachts, it's not that big a deal, but when you see 9 super yachts all side by side, you know, sailing yacht and motor yachts together, it's just such a cool visual. And so here we went, did a very leisurely cruise to St. Martin, which is really not that far, not far enough for me. I would have liked to be on the boat a little longer. In fact, I was cruising aboard Atalante, which is a beautiful, truly classic and just perfection. It's so well maintained, just a beautiful, beautiful yacht. Anyway, so eventually we had to get to the bridge at Sipson Bay. You know that infamous bridge at Ipswich Bay. You've heard about it. You know, with the little bar right at the side where people line up and wait for boats to hit the bridge. Beer in hand and watching for the spectacle. Well, they had quite a show on that day because we all went through one after the other at about around 1 o'clock. And then everybody docked over there at Sipson Bay, which was quite busy with a lot of big boats that I recognize that a lot of times are around here in Fort Lauderdale, where I am. And then after that, we had to endure the judging of a cocktail competition with nine yacht crew really trying to outdo each other with creativity and tastes. And well, of course, I had to try, yeah, because we were judging, right?
Yes, of course, professional.
Absolutely. Yeah. You have to, you know, the stuff you have to do for this job is just challenging. But I only stepped very gingerly because I didn't want to be the one that fell off a gangway into the port. And anyway, the results were quite nice. There was some really delicious cocktail. It had to be either vodka or rum, and then that's it. They could run away with their imagination, and they sure did. And then the event finally concluded on Sunday with a beautiful brunch at La Samana, the other property, Belmont property in St. Martin. They are on a hill overlooking this gorgeous beach. And maybe the French heritage in me, maybe I was a little bit partial to St. Martin, you know, where people do speak a little bit of French on this side of the island. And then, of course, there is really good food there and a lot of great wines because St. Martin has that connection. So the provisioning there is quite good. Anyway, so the event, concluding event, was this wonderful brunch on top of a hill in a villa that is part of the property La Semana. And just a really beautiful, great views. Yeah, lovely program.
Incredible, incredible. And then I understand that a lot of the boat team continued on to St. Bart's for the bucket. Is that right?
That's right. Yes, a few of them also cruised on the yacht all the way from St. Martin to St. Bart's. And yeah, booked as another event there this week. And but I had to come back and get ready for another boat show.
Yes. So that boat show is Palm Beach, and that's coming up in a week, I believe.
Oh, dear.
No rest for you, I'm afraid, Cecile. So I've been once and it seemed like a great show, not too hectic, some good big new boats. And I think this is one of your favorite of the Florida yacht shows, Cecile. What do you think it gets right that others perhaps could learn from?
Well, I don't know if it's, you know, it's the location. It may not be possible to really replicate that in other locations. But yeah, it's a more leisurely pace. You can leave the show, have a nice lunch with clients, contacts, colleagues, whatever, and come back. You know, no hassle, no trauma, no outrageously priced parking, which is a bit ironic since it's West Palm Beach. But yeah, I think that's part of it. It's more contained. It's easier to access. The weather usually this time of the year in Florida is really nice. Not too hot, not rainy. You watch, I will probably have jinxed it. But anyway, and I think for this reason, it's really gaining momentum with the superyacht builders. In fact, there is quite a few superyachts and then superyacht builders coming from Europe, which is nice, nice way of catching up with them. I think the largest yacht insured this year will be Arrow from FedShip. Well, it's a pity you won't be here with us this year, Caroline. I quite enjoyed your visit last time.
Yes, well, I'm sad I'm not going to be there either. I seem to be missing all of the fun on that side of the pond. But in terms of news, Cecile, why don't you kick us off with some interesting news from the world of superyachting?
Yes, we saw a couple of big, big projects on the water this week. The first one of which is the 111.8-meter Explorer Superyacht NB724, which is one of the largest superyachts currently under construction in the world. And it's been spotted being towed off the coast of Vigo in northern Spain. It's a seven-deck superyacht, which was moved from the yard to the dry dock to finish being fared and painted, with delivery sometime later this year. It's the largest private yacht built in Spain and will form the flagship of shipyard Freyr. The shipbuilder specializes in commercial ships, but it has built one private yacht in the past, the 73.6 meter Naya. And this ship is, or this ship, yes, this super yacht is designed by Battenberg and Raoul. In fact, I noticed on Battenberg and Raoul's Instagram account that they took exception to how some writers talk about their role in the design. They don't like pen or other euphemism. How would they describe their work? They are designers, period.
Okay, so that's fine for a 30-word news story, but it becomes a bit of a problem when you're writing something longer and you don't want to write design every 10 words. So, you know, the designer designed the design. So I'd be very happy to consider alternatives to pen, but we do need something that we can use as an alternative to design. I do find that difficult sometimes. Sometimes it feels right to say that. Sometimes it feels wrong. So I'll be careful when I'm talking about their yachts anyway.
Yeah, no, but it's not the first time I've heard designers take exception to alternative use of the word, like styling. They absolutely do not like styling.
Yes, yes, yes.
It does sound a little bit superficial maybe, but anyway.
Yeah, there was a famous quote from John Battenberg, I think, writing to, I think, a magazine editor. I think it was a magazine editor. Saying exactly that, he took exception. He said that, you know, styling is something that Vidal Sassoon does, something along those lines. I'm a designer, which is kind of fair enough.
Yeah, that's right. I do remember that quote. That's really funny. Yeah, anyway, so it's definitely designed by Battenberg and Raoul. We know that for sure.
So do you want to take us to the next news story, Cecile?
Another really big boat recently launched is Lursen's first methanol superyacht, which is really exciting news. This is the way the industry is moving, right, to try to find a solution to this big problem we've created with fossil fuel-based fuels. This is 114 meters with an exterior designed by Mark Newsom. The sales director for Lursen, Michael Bremen, talked about it a little bit at the Superyacht Design Festival in Cortina in the context of the shipyard's quest to reach net zero.
So actually, so when you say launched, Cecile, she looks like this looks like a technical launch. She's pretty bare steel right now. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. She's clearly a few months away at least from delivery. But there was quite a few interesting clues in that picture that was released by the yard, interestingly enough. The Japanese flag on the bow caused quite a bit of a debate, and we were trying to figure out who might be the owner of this, because it's pretty unusual for owners of that part of the world to own such a big super yacht. Of course, the yard would not disclose any of that information, obviously, but the owner himself seems to have done that on his Instagram account. There is an entrepreneur and art collector by the name of Yusaku Maezawa who posted about the yacht on his account. And he's quite an interesting character, this gentleman. He founded a company called Start Today in 1998 and an online fashion retail website called ZozoTown in 2004. And he's done quite well with it. He's into art, cars, space. He's gone to space and planning some more trips there. Somebody described it as a real-life Tony Stark. So if indeed this is his yacht, he didn't say, here is my yacht. He just said, here is this boat. But it will be the largest yacht ever delivered to a Japanese owner, I believe. Our data guru, Raphael, thinks only about 12 yachts belong to Japanese owners currently.
Interesting, interesting.
There's been some, obviously, Japan knows how to build ships. They have a large commercial ship and a shipping fleet, and at least one large yacht was built in Japan in the past. Do you know which one it is, Caroline? Or which one I may be talking about?
I don't, Cecile. Can you tell me which one it is?
Yeah, well, of course, Raphael, I had to remind me of this because I'd forgotten, but it was built as Evergreen. And it is now Atessa, which is one of the largest yachts owned by an American who did an extensive refit on the yacht himself.
How interesting. So, okay, so this latest launch Looking at the boat, we don't know a huge amount about her. Obviously, a yacht of this size is usually quite private. But you can see from the photographs, particularly from above, some of the features of the yacht to give us a bit of some clues about the design, basically. So the superstructure is quite far forward with a large aft deck, which suggests a kind of explorer style profile. And then on that aft deck, there's a swimming, what looks like a swimming pool. Yes, and there's also this kind of unusual oblong well cut into the deck, which we've been speculating about. So it's pretty big for a tender bay. So yeah. Perhaps a submarine bay or a heli hangar of some sort. But what do you think? So, I mean, suggestions on a postcard, basically. We'd love to know your thoughts on this, particularly if we've got anyone at the yard who wants to send us an anonymous tip off. It's always welcome.
Yeah, please do. Yeah, I don't know. It was suggested that perhaps it was deep enough for maybe a fishing boat. But I think I am more on the side of the suggestion of a heli hangar myself.
Okay. I kind of hope it's a submarine. That was more exciting.
Yes.
So, Cecile, you've got a slightly less happy story for us, I think.
Well, yeah, it's gotten a lot of attention, this story, for some reason. So basically, we've talked about it before, the Nordhavn Vivi Ray, which is currently doing a circumnavigation, ran into difficulties during her trip recently. Her propellers got tangled in a tow line and fishing net. She suffered some minor, mostly cosmetic damage later on from a collision with a tanker that came to rescue the passengers in some 55 knots of wind.
Wow.
Yeah. So the good news is yes, the damage from that collision, which just happened because the seas were totally insane, like 8 to 10 feet waves. I'm not sure how many meters that is off the top of my head, but big seas.
Yep.
Anyway, so she is apparently on her way to Brisbane, Australia, for repairs, and she'll be resuming her journey pretty soon.
So yeah, not as sad as I thought, actually.
No, it's a good news piece. Yeah, but there was a lot of speculation, including, you know, stories about what will happen, you know, if the yacht is adrift, somebody can just claim ownership, blah, blah, blah. People love to look at the worst case scenarios. But no, she's in good hands and on her way to being repaired. But yeah, this story got an awful lot of attention. I even saw a story in a blog called Loose Cannon, which was started by a former marine journalist. And he kind of went on for a while about the risk of towing a tender. Yes, one of the reasons the boat was disabled was, in fact, the seas were very, very harsh and the tow eye probably got ripped off and the tender got loose and maybe the tow rope got tangled up in the propeller. But in general, I mean, it's really risky out there in those such big seas. Things can happen. And as a matter of fact, fairly recently, I spoke to a captain of a Heesen yacht, a brand new yacht, that got stopped in its track during a transatlantic to this part of the world. The boat picked up a errant tow line, probably from one of those big freighters, and like a massive nylon, really hard, really big rope. And it got completely tied up around one of the propeller, and the boat just got stopped in its track, you know, just all of a sudden, boom, engine alarms blaring, everything, and full stop. So he had to figure out a way to get loose from that on his own. Where they were, there was no rescuing. They were very far in the deepest part of the Atlantic, and he had to go in, and the chef went in as well to spot him, to try and get this propeller loose and get back on its way. It took quite some time for them to figure out what to do. They couldn't cut it. They couldn't get it loose until they finally got a tip from another captain who had been in a similar situation and told them they had to try to reverse the engine and try to yank that rope off, which eventually they did. So, wow, things you don't think about. But I think this kind of thing has actually happened perhaps more than we know.
Yeah. So it can happen to anyone, really. Bad luck. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, there's quite a bit of debris out there in the water, so.
Yeah, yet another reason to keep our oceans clean.
Absolutely. And keep a lookout for stuff.
Exactly. So, Cecile, what's your brokerage pick of the week?
Oh, yes. Well, I think she will be in Palm Beach for the show, which we just discussed. And I picked Ice Bear, which is one of FedShip's ex-gallant ladies. I picked her because of her South Florida connection. Yeah, that's home. I like to talk about the boats that I have seen in the marinas around here. She hasn't been in Fort Lauderdale for a while, but she's coming back for the Palm Beach Boat Show because she's listed for sale. So she was one of the many gallant ladies that was commissioned by the founder of JM Family Enterprises, the late automobile entrepreneur Jim Moran. She is 54 meters or about 170 feet. I think she was the third of the gallant ladies and the first displacement FedShip that he had commissioned. She was designed by DeVogt with an interior by Paola Smith and was delivered in 1988. She has transatlantic range and her design is very unique and distinctive. She has a really long foredeck inspired by traditional sport fishers, which Mr. Moran liked, a cockpit with fighting chairs for deep sea fishing, and an enclosed observation lounge, plus a crow's nest equipped with a helm station above it. So when you're on top of there, you got to have a really good view. Yeah. She's got an enclosed tender bay in the coach roof, and a second tender is on the aft deck. She may be one of the early boats that had the owner's cabin on the main deck, and she accommodates up to 10 guests. As far as we know, she was only used privately and always has been very well maintained. She's listed for sale by Burgess and is asking just under $12 million.
Well, compared to my pick this week, Cecile, that is an absolute steal. So,
did you go for a big one? Did you?
Yeah. So I keep picking these smallish classic yachts, and I nearly did it again this week. But in the interest of variety, I've chosen a big 2020 FedShip, which is the boat that you mentioned earlier, Cecile, Arrow, the 75 meter designed by H2, which is going to be at Palm Beach Boat Show. So this one's of particular interest to us because we tried to get a feature on this boat, but the owner was very private at the time and wouldn't release interior pictures. But now that she's for sale, you can see inside the boat if you go to our website. So do that, even if you're not in the market. She features a large cinema screen on the main deck. There's accommodation for 12 guests in 6 cabins, huge owner's cabin with an office and his and hers dressing rooms, as well as a main deck VIP suite. There's a glass lift that connects all the deck, all the lower main and bridge decks. There are quarters for a crew of up to 19. There's a big indoor-outdoor focus, so there are glass bulwarks to allow really beautiful views out to sea. There's an upper saloon bar that flows out to an informal dining table, which seats 12 guests, so you can have lovely al fresco meals. And then a nice little drink at the bar if it's getting a bit nippy. There's up on the sun deck, there's a pizza oven and a barbecue and a professionally equipped gym and a spa pool. And also a spectacular beach club that opens on 3 sides, I think. She's also hybrid, so efficient for a 75 meter. And all of this can be yours for the very reasonable price of €139,900,000.
Did everybody catch? She has a pizza oven. It's totally worth it.
Exactly. Totally worth it. And she's for sale with Fraser, I should have mentioned.
Okay. Yeah. Fraser is one of the brokers that has a very nice, extensive fleet of yachts at Palm Beach this year. So now I wanted to go back into something that's my absolute favorite thing in the world, data, numbers. Not really. I'm a word person, really a word person, not a mathematic guru. In fact, I had to question our data guru about one of the numbers he gave us because I couldn't quite picture the percentage. But anyway, we are choosing to take a bit of a look at super sailing yachts. We are looking, in fact, at the fleet of sailing yachts above 60 meters this week. One of the reasons we're looking at sailing yachts this week, obviously, is the bucket going on. And also, there's been a couple of really nice recent launches in a couple last couple of weeks that made it interesting to look at. Do you want to mention a couple of those recent launches, Caroline?
Sure. So the 47-meter Nilaya launched at Royal Houseman recently. That is a beautiful yacht. We've also got the 60-meter Sarissa, which was launched at Royal Houseman a couple of weeks ago. So a couple there from Royal Houseman. Mm-hmm. And the imminent delivery of 127-meter Koru, the much-discussed Ocean Co.
It's getting a lot of attention.
It's getting a lot of attention. Can't think why. Might have a well-known owner that we can't mention the name of, but you can Google that. There's also been some exciting news generally. So, for example, the announcement of a new series of from Southern Wind, the SW100X. But we are going to focus on a very elite part of this fleet, and that's sailing yachts above 60 meters.
So yes, drilling a little bit into the numbers that was provided by our data guru, Raphael, we now think that there's a fleet of 25 sailing super yachts over 60 meters with a total length overall of 1,859, which includes the spars and bowsprits. And that makes it an average length of 74.4 meter. The average age of this fleet is 17.5 years.
And then if we look to the future in our global order book, which is published every January and discusses yachts in build and on order around the world, four projects are under construction of this length over 60 meters. And that's if we exclude all projects that are currently on hold. The total LOA under construction is 346 meters. And perhaps more usefully, the average LOA is 86.5 meters. So actually slightly larger than the current fleet average LOA.
Yeah, it's pretty big, 86.5 meter average. Wow.
Exactly. But I wonder if it's slightly skewed by the fact that it includes a boat like Koru, which is soon going to become the second largest sailing yacht in the world, just behind 143 meter sailing yacht A.
I'm going to jump in there, Carolyn, just for a second. I do remember one of our readers, or listeners, I should say, did say that sometimes we're not quite clear with the names of the yachts. So the yacht that we were discussing that is getting a lot of attention is Koru, K-O-R-U. So that's the one that you just mentioned that is quite large and maybe increasing the average length of the yachts under construction currently.
Yes, good one to know the name of, I think.
Yes. So then the total number of superyachts that have been delivered that are 24 meter plus is 12,265. But the total of sailing yachts delivered that are 24 meter plus is 1,874 vessels. So sailing yachts only represent 15.28% of the total fleet, which is not huge.
Then if we look specifically at sailing yachts above 60 meters, they represent 1.33% of sailing yachts delivered 24 meters plus. And they represent 5.12% of super yachts above 60 meters motor and sail. So that's 1.33% of sailing yachts over 24 meters and 5.12% of super yachts above 60 meters full stop.
Right. Mm. Yeah. Well, hopefully there will be a few more because, you know, sailing yachts are one way of avoiding this pesky problem of polluting the atmosphere.
Yeah, I mean, they certainly... I was speaking recently to some designers, and if you have a functional rig that's manageable in a lot of conditions and you can actually sail a large sailing yacht a lot of the time, which a lot of them can't be sailed a lot of the time because they're so, the forces involved are so huge that it's quite dangerous to do and it's a huge operation. But if you've got a diner rig or something that will allow you to actually sail the boat, they are incredibly, they have genuine green credentials. So something like Black Pearl or Maltese Falcon can cross oceans without turning on the engines, which is incredible.
It is incredible when you think about it. And of course, that's the way we used to do it, right?
Exactly. Yeah, this very old.
This guy named Columbus, I don't think he was using an engine.
No, exactly.
Right. I think that's it. Thank you for listening to this week's Boat Briefing, which was mixed and produced by Grace Nilsson and is a production of Boat International Media. Thank you also to our shiny brand new sponsor, KVH. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.